This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
More of your favourite shows.
Joy 94.9.
Ah, lovely to come off the back of the wonderful Dean Beck, so to speak, and off the line.
On the line with Dean Beck.
I was just testing.
I'm so happy he's back on the airwaves here. Prior to us.
Totally. Well, but you are with Lefty Pinkos. I'm Kath.
That's right, and I'm Brian.
And for the next hour, we're going to be having a great time with...
a guy I called Sammy W from time to time, but his real name is Sammy Warman, and...
he's a comic... artist, illustrator, and apparently a total Lefty Pinko.
He is a total Lefty Pinko. I mean, if you're thinking about artists who get into politics and sort of getting into the nitty-gritty issues that are in our society,
then Sam's the person.
Yeah,
and Grinder, he's clever, dude. He gets around.
Sexuality-wise, he's a bit of an interesting dude. He's politically, he's fascinating.
Maybe you should see what he's wearing, but we best not talk about
that. He's wonderful. I guess, yeah, as always, we kind of think about our music here on Lefty Pinkos, and the music I've got for this particular episode... a part of a CD I gave to Sam back... you know when you kind of meet a friend and you want to kind of get them to know you and you give them a CD? I gave him a CD of my music and stuff that I like. So I've kind of... that's forming tonight's music here on Lefty Pinkos. So we're going to start off with a track that he really likes and that he actually made a request for on the compilation I gave to him. A track by Coloured Stone. It's called Kapi Bulka. And yeah, it's going out to Sam.
Yep.
Here you go.
You're with Joy.
Joy 94.9.
That was Coloured Stone with Kapi Bulka. Mm. Going out to Sammy Warman, our very special guest here this week on Lefty Pinkos.
Yep.
Sam is a comic artist, an illustrator, a political activist, and a queer guy that mixes up sexuality and polyamory and sex, basically, in a really interesting way. So it's going to be a very, very interesting episode of Lefty Pinkos. But welcome to the show, Sam.
Hey, Sam.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Can you describe what you're wearing first? It's very...
I thought this was purely audio.
Give us visuals.
Just a quick one about the two...
I'm wearing a hot pink T-shirt, which I bought at an op shop, but I thought looked a bit like something a guy at a yacht party would wear. You know how street guys wear pink shirts now? And they're like... I remember someone I knew said like that only like the biggest men can wear pink shirts because... it proves that they're so manly.
Real
they
men,
care about
yeah.
It's like when men take on knitting or something like that.
Yeah,
too,
but who cares? It's actually really faggy, and so I wanted to make it faggy, so I tucked it in to my tight
jeans. Yeah,
he's rolled up the sleeves, people.
Yeah, you just need a black like, pack
and
of fags in there or something.
Going. Yeah, packet of fags.
But the best thing are the nipples. Come on, let's cut straight.
Yeah, I have nipple holes.
What Sam has done is cut out those two holes for his nipples, and it's actually
and I've got
more
this unnerving feeling that I'm being watched by Sam's nipples here in the studio.
It's more distracting than you'd think. To talk to him, but we will talk to him.
Talk to my nipples.
Sam, so your comic thing, when did that start?
Comics specifically only a few years ago, but I always drew pictures.
Actually, we've called you a comic book artist and an illustrator. I mean, what's the term you like to go with?
Good one.
I don't know, probably comic book. I don't know, really. It's incidental to me. I just draw pictures. Like, I think that lots of people are ashamed of comics and think they're lowbrow, so like to call themselves graphic novelists and all these things are trendy, like trying to pretend we're of a different brow, but I sort of embrace the scrappiness of comics. And yeah, I don't really like the title artist either, because it's kind of elitist in my opinion. Like, I think that everyone makes stuff and we shouldn't have divisions about that,
who is an artist and who is not.
Yeah, exactly. And like art being like a separate thing for people to consume. Like, I think that most things are kind of artful. So, like, dividing things into what is art and what's not is... you might be able to tell me if this is true or not. Was there a word for art in Indigenous languages? I've been told that...
You're interviewing me now, are we? you're asking Kat the question?
No.
Both of you.
No, him.
Actually, that's a damn good question, Sam. I'm not really sure. Like, I mean, there's over 350 different languages in Australia. Mm. So, I mean, they may have had different concepts on art and / culture. We sort of see the two as being very linked. Mm. But, I don't know whether we kind of thought, you know, that's the art gallery space over there and this is the studio space over there and this is, yeah. So, I mean, we view art in a contemporary sense as being, art, culture, spirituality. It's all holistic in that sort of holistic view that Aboriginal people tend to have of the world.
Mm.
But back to you.
Well, that's what I heard. Yes. That, like, within some nations, at least in some languages, that there was no word for art because it was central to existence and it wasn't an abstraction.
I like that.
It was like everything was artful. So, and I just think the word art is like a big dumb word, like written on a kid's sketchbook and not much more than that. Like,
or a class you go to for fifth period or something. And
So don't relegate it to like a hobby or a pastime. Like, make it central to everything.
Art
sounds kind of pretentious, but
I think talk yourself back into being an artist. But it's all good. But can you actually make a living doing that? Is it, you know, does it keep alive?
Probably not. Like a kind of living.
Do you have a straight job as such?
Yeah, I work as a carer sometimes with a friend.
Huh.
Which I've done for years. And I don't really. I guess I could make a living out of it if I wanted to be a bit more tacky about it. But I'm pretty non-businessy about the way I approach drawing. So I don't make that much of a living, but I don't need much money to live the kind of life that I live anyway. So
it's funny that you mention that, because whenever I, you know, call you on the phone and have chats and stuff, you always say, I've been drawing, or I've got to be drawing, or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's, I mean, you're kind of very dedicated to that, which is beautiful to see. But I mean, how much time does your drawing and your art practice take up in your life?
I feel like it could always
take
more.
It's a dominant thing,
but like every day hours.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Without a doubt. Yeah, I get kind of itchy hands if I don't draw every day, which is quite hard to maintain. Like, it can be something that you put last on your list of priorities, and friends aren't that forgiving if you say, oh, I can't catch up because I'm drawing. They're like, what? You're drawing? Come and have a cup of tea. Like, so, yeah, it takes effort to carve out space to draw, but...
And do you come from an artistic family, or is it something that's kind of
autistic,
just central to you?
My mum was a fashion designer when she was younger, and then was an art teacher.
Yep.
My dad's like kind of more, he was like a community lawyer and not very artistic at all, actually. And my mum hasn't drawn in years, but she like always thinks with an artistic edge,
frame of mind.
She's like, that would be a good painting.
And do you think
that's like part of her filter of looking at the world?
And has that influenced you in your work or in that sense?
Were you encouraged?
Yeah, they were enablers.
Yeah.
I think so, yeah. They were really encouraging. And they never really like expected me to live a normative life.
I wish my parents had been a bit more like that.
I mean, they were oppressive Christians at the same time. But in the terms of lifestyle and jobs and stuff, they were pretty trusting of my choices.
I guess on that note, I mean, we'll bring this up later on, but I just want to ask, how did they view sexuality when you came out to them? Was it with that sort of religious background?
It was funny because my dad was sort of more strict growing up, and after I told mum and like we had a little cry together, I was like, oh, why didn't you ever ask me? Like, surely you knew. And she's like, oh, I think I did know, but I just didn't want to own up to it. But then when she told dad, like the next day, because he wasn't there when I told her, he responded by saying, oh, of course, like Blind Freddy could have told you that about me. And so he'd known, but they'd never talked about it between themselves, which is quite strange to like revealed something to me about their relationship.
Wow, that's real. I mean, it was never a discussion point, or never, you do think Sam, you might be gay or something.
No, they never talked about it. Imagine your partner, like you made a child and you didn't talk about their sexuality.
That's very interesting. Right, I mean, it's kind of...
Unless they were lying about never talking about it. I suppose that's a possibility. Anyway, you're with Joy. This is Lefty Pinkos. Kath and Brian with you. And this evening we're talking to Sam Wallman. Stay with us.
Joy 94.9.
You're tuned in to Lefty Pinkos here on Joy 94.9.
Sure.
Kath and Brian here, joined by Sam Wallman. Sam, if you don't know him, and you should know him, he's an illustrator, a comic book writer. He's exhibited a few works, and I guess just to give you a bit of a context of Sam's achievements, he's actually, some of his work is featured on publications like the cover of Overland, a journal, which is quite hoity-toity literary stuff from Melbourne here.
Yeah.
What other publications have you been on the cover for, Sam?
On the cover?
Yeah, you've been a cover artist for
Overland,
poster
boy.
I think I did a cover of Voice Works years ago, but I don't know if that means much.
Like another writing journal, literary journal,
For young folk. But not much cover stuff, but I've done stuff for, I've got some work in Arena coming up soon, which is and like Dude, Transine by the wonderful Jez, etc.
Yeah.
And
but
Ampersand.
You're a self-publisher too. I'm holding Pen Erases Paper, and it's got a very sort of hallucinogenic, very fine detail, 70s, 80s style, but queer cover. With very what fine
appears
work.
To be sperm all over it. Is that sperm?
Oh, is that what that is?
It's
oh.
not actually. I like that people always think it is. Yeah. But it's actually meant to be their sort of spirit or aura, ah. like coming out of their guts and splashing them in the face. And
yeah.
everyone's meant to be dealing with their spirit in a different way. Like some people are trying to deep throat it. Some people are slapping it away.
Kissing and licking it and hugging it.
But, I mean, it's open for interpretation, but that's kind of how I see it.
I guess on your art, Sam, or I'm going to call it art, so I do apologize. Sure. If that offends you, then you can fine. Slap me outside out of the studios. But
ooh, can I watch?
Your art, I guess one of the things, defining features I find about it is it's always in black and white. There's never any color in that.
Mm-hmm.
And
really?
It's, and is that something you can consciously do? And is it some kind of comment you want to make? Or like, cause
it's cheap.
It's cheap. It's cheap. I guess it's printed. Yep.
Well,
okay. Yep.
That's an easy answer.
And it's just, I feel like I use a lot of grey and show like texture and tone. And
yeah.
I feel like the variety within black to white is enough for me to work yep. with.
Because
so.
I wanted to become a whole wanker in my research for tonight and getting you in here. Because I guess, yeah, I just saw it as being black and white, but the issues and the politics and the people you present, they're all these shades of grey. You know, there's this colour in there anyway in terms of the personalities you represent, the people you want to kind of highlight. And it's, yeah, I kind of just thought, is that some intentional thing? Is it an artistic thing?
Yeah, I'm that deep. I like flat black
yep.
as a black colour, like as a graphic symbol. I don't know. I never really thought about it that much. I just don't use colour. It's kind of just a world I haven't entered yet. Maybe I will, but like mm-hmm. the way I print these little books myself, it's cheap to do black and white. And
yeah,
I sort of work within a tradition of like self-published DIY 60s underground comics, like most of Robert Crumb's best stuff.
It
is
looks
black
a
and
bit
white.
Crumbish.
Yeah, yeah. All those people,
and lots of sort of almost parodies of people, like the cartoonish kind of characters. You can sort of read the character in the way you've done their face.
Their
but
face,
I've just flung open pen erasers paper at this marvelous point. Just check this. It's like a black page with writing on it, with all sorts of detail, incredible detail. And it says, "What if living a normal life is the most destructive thing you could do?" I love that.
Yeah.
How deep is that?
But I was quite confused by that, hence the opposing page completely contradicting that.
Do
thought,
you want to read
which
it
is
out?
What my mind does. Who is to judge anyone else for trying to get their needs met? So, sort of trying to excuse people at the same time as condemn them, which is the binary that exists in my head when I'm sitting on a tram.
Now, you've presented a word that I want to kind of pluck out and highlight. Contradiction. Mm. I guess that's something that when you look at your work and in the conversations I've had with people about your work at exhibitions or over your book, people can interpret your work in a way that, you know, I might have a certain reading of it. And I don't know, yeah, like, I guess it's like normal art. People have certain readings of what they do, but you've kind of got this duality or this, yeah, contradictions that are presented in your work. Why do you offer that?
I suppose I feel like it's lacking from like a lot of leftist debate, like, there's an attraction to certainty, which is
yep. And is that a Howard thing? I mean, certainty is a very Howard word to me. Like, you know, we need certainty
yeah,
when it comes to land rights or native
well.
Title. Yeah, but
Yeah, well, I guess we're all attracted to concrete things, but the older I get, the more I am confused by these concrete things, and they alienate me. And like, I kind of revel in my uncertainty and feel like it's a respectful place to start from. Like, I think it's really important to have a strong enough opinion to direct your own politics and your philosophy, but yeah, I never want to be arrogant about it or assume that I'm the guy that you should go to answer your question. Like, I probably just have more questions.
I think uncertainty is sort of a place that only the wise get to, really. I'm impressed.
Oh, I must be deeply wise then.
Yeah, deeply.
I'm very uncertain.
Deeply uncertain. Deeply wise. There's something very lovely about that. Sexuality, does that sort of, is that all through the comics? Because I think I just saw two guys in bed together or something.
It is throughout the comics, but it's usually like straight guys. They're like, oh, you're the guy that always draws dicks. And I'm like, everyone draws dicks. You actually only notice because I draw like gay dicks, but actually everyone draws dicks.
Where's the dicks? Yeah.
Yeah. And I was determined for this book to be dick free. Like, the dick
is it? Oh,
well,
okay.
No
yep.
But it's actually not.
There's quit looking.
Oh, really? Okay.
But yeah, that's probably
sexual. It's a bit like, where's Wally?
Where's
Wally? I have to go through later on the train, maybe find all them. Anyway.
But I guess like there's a sexual dimension to most interactions and experiences. So there's often there's sex in lots of the comics, sure. Even unintentionally. If I draw an old guy on the bus, maybe there'll be like a look in his eye or something like that.
Like what's that word? Lascivious.
Lascivious,
sorry.
What's
yeah,
that mean?
It's sort of like that kind of lustful. And yeah, like, you know, undressing lustful. You with your eyes or kind of, oh my God, them nipples are looking at me again. Those lascivious nipples.
It's very difficult to concentrate, I have to say.
You guys have them too.
Anyway, where were we? Nipples.
Nipples,
sorry.
Oh, yeah.
Oh. The nipples.
Maybe we should turn the lights. No, best not. You're with Lefty Pinkos here. This is Kath and Brian. We're trying to keep it together on this episode with Sam Wallman, the comic with nipples.
That's right.
Joy 94.9.
You're with Lefty Pinkos, Kath and Brian with you. And this evening we're talking to comic illustrator and
loudmouth
and nipply Sam Wallman.
Yes.
Live in the studio.
We've had some really interesting chats between tracks and between takes, as we do here in the studios at Joy. And Kath, talk about this dude stuff here.
Well, see, I've only just realised that one of Sam's comics came into the edition of Dude, which was the Lovers edition. It was either the third or the fourth one. I don't remember.
The third one, yeah.
Third one. And I co-edited that with a few other people. And one of Sam's cartoons came into the piece. And it's this one, looks like a kind of John Waters character saying, me, well, I'm the past and the future sucking each other off. And I remember that coming in, you know, the collection, and me going, what does that mean? And Jess going, I know what it means. And I'm going, So, you know, are you going to tell me? He goes, oh, no.
It's esoteric. If you don't get it, you don't get it.
It's the vibe, you know, or whatever. He didn't say that. But, yeah, there it is. And now it makes a lot more sense. It's sort of it's like ironic kind of twisted kind of world. But
I don't think that one was so much meant to be ironic. It was, like, based on a discussion that I had with a trans friend about, like, wanting to enjoy their transition experience instead of just seeing it as an end game. Like, they were like, no, I am the product of my past and my future. And it, like, I sort of extrapolated that to be, like, those two things sort of fucking or, like, smushing together the past and the future in the form of a person.
That's and what Jess must have got.
Because that's, and that's like, you know, it's, I mean, because I have this view when it comes to trans issues or trans people, sorry, that you kind of can't go back, or you kind of can't acknowledge the past in a way that, you know, you've got to acknowledge the current, contemporary identity. And that's interesting that you kind of delve into that kind of stuff.
It suddenly makes sense.
I probably wouldn't have gone there if it hadn't been based on a conversation with a trans person. I wouldn't want to, like, talk on their behalf. But, yeah, I was inspired by that statement of, like, yeah, enjoying the transition or trying to and, like, engaging with it rather than waiting for it to be over.
On that point, I kind of just want to acknowledge, or I guess get a bit kind of nitty gritty here and say, like, you know, you're a non-Indigenous or you're a white boy, basically. So, I mean, not to box
it's not
you,
his fault,
but no, I'm not saying it's a problematic thing because it's not. Yeah. But I kind of I admire your confidence to get into, you know, kind of identities or politics around things like trans stuff or Indigenous stuff or queer stuff. It's kind of you delve into that, and it's like I just sort of stand back and I go, ah, Sammy W, I love you because you're so. You're so non-white in that sense. Why do you do that? Where's that come from?
I guess trying to use my privilege, like, to be a bit of a mouthpiece. Like, usually if I'm talking about racial stuff or trans stuff, it's using quotes of friends and insights into their lives. It's not me imagining what their experience is like. It's, like, using their own experience to help other people understand issues. But yeah, sometimes I wonder, like, it's not my place, but, like, you've said a lot, Brian, that you think things will only get better if everyone gets on board with, especially, like, overcoming racism and stuff like that. It shouldn't just be brown people or black people talking about those issues. Like, white people, the people with power, have to talk about racism and, like, call each other out more than... That shouldn't be the job of marginalized people to, like, police white people. We should be, like, pulling each other up more often. So I guess I believe in that. But yeah, I do try and do it very carefully, and I put a lot of thought into being sensitive about it, I suppose.
And I guess I want to know where that comes from. Like, I mean, in terms of, I guess I'm just, the obvious thing for me is to suggest that it might come from your upbringing that is involved religion rather, that often has a social justice kind of aspect or bend to it. Is that where it came from, or is it kind of, you know, like, your values in that sense?
Maybe, and maybe just, like, being a fag in the burbs and like okay, knowing that that sucks, like gaining some insight into being kind of marginalized, like relatively not so marginalized. I'm like a white able-bodied middle-class dude, like not to berate myself, but that's, you could say those things. But I do feel like I have some access to some sort of oppression. And working as a carer for a while, you get these little windows into people's experience. And it might be the only useful thing I can do is like help facilitate these dialogues.
Kathy, you're going to have to ask him a question because I'm just mesmerized by his nipples.
I'm dying to ask him a question because we were talking earlier and Sam here was saying that he was a great advocate for old school faggotry. And I said, really? And of course, my mind's full of all sorts of ideas, like, you know, some sort of discipline and punish scene with someone dressed up as a headmaster. But no, what he's talking about is that Sam was saying he reckons that Grindr is kind of killing old school faggotry. And you're here to bring it back. Was that what you're trying to say?
That's part of why the shirt is here as well, because it's kind of like an old style of flagging and like not being able to like, because there's this aggrandizement of like the straight acting gay and like on Grindr and all these apps.
True, yeah. Yes.
Like everyone wants to be macho and that's like the hot way to be. And I want to get laid too. So sometimes I might butch it up, or like in a shop, if there's a butch guy serving me, I might like talk like this a little bit and then like kick myself when I leave the shop. But if I'm dressed like this, which I don't have the guts to do that often, but I can't hide, exactly.
Is that just because you came from Sydney not long ago? It's like you're being up that totally. Way, so just, you know, hanging out in Sydney. And
I was wearing this in Sydney. It was great. But yeah, there's lots of people that can't choose to hide their markers, you know, so we should all flag more.
So you reckon, like, you know, cruising without, you know, that Grindr thing, you already know that this person's more than likely going to, you know, come the distance. But cruising is a much more...
It's scary. Yeah, it's exciting.
You don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah, in Sydney, there was, like, a cute boy in a cafe, and I, like, terrifiedly wrote my number on a bit of trash that I found out the front and, like, slipped it to him, and my heart was fluttering. I felt like I was, like, 17 again, and that felt really good. And instead of this, like...
digital
capitalistic kind of, exchange of Grindr where it's like really market based, it's like shopping, and yeah, we're all boiled down to a photo of like pecs and one sentence. Yeah, I mean, there's something nice about the efficiency of Grindr sometimes too. But
did that guy call you back?
He did. Ooh. Yeah. Ooh. And it was great.
A victory for old school faggotry. Speaking of old school, and I've also noticed in the Pen Erasers paper booklet that there's a guide to, is it Yarra River beats?
Yeah.
And they're real beats.
Yeah, definitely. Well, hopefully still real beats with Grindr and gay marriage.
Beats as well.
Yeah, I think so. Which might be for the best. I was at a beat recently and I was like, it was night and I was like, should I be here? This is kind of dangerous.
You have to describe it. Was it kind of
weird? It was very dark and by the river. Like, it was a beautiful place to be. But I was like, this is not that safe, and I don't know if I should glorify this that much, and maybe a Grindr might be better for people because, I don't know. It's
efficient, it's safer, and you can kind of, negotiate things better.
Yeah, and be in a safe place when you meet and stuff like that.
Yeah, right.
There are all these people that are like, oh, the beats are a thing of the past and we should leave them behind, and they make us look bad and that's not us. And it's like, well...
But sometimes dangerous is sexy. I mean, I don't want to promote it as such, but...
I do.
You know.
And also,
well, you know.
Councils actually dedicate themselves now to kind of making cruising spaces a bit safer in terms of lighting, you know, and all that kind of hoo-ha. And I don't know, just kind of it's... Yeah.
What about that park you and I had a picnic up by near the Peel, and... It's like designed.
Oh, the digital park on Peel Street.
What's it called?
It's called. I call it the digital park.
Why?
It's like, let's meet at the digital park. But it's like it's got this sort of digital kind of pixelated cubes in it, and it's very sort of hyper city urban.
Mm.
And on the corner of Oxford and Peel Street.
Yeah.
And it becomes a bit of a, a cruising sort of pub at night, and it's like it's one of those they've thought about how do we minimise public sex in this space, but. Gay men being gay men and being sexual in many respects, they do have sex there.
Every surface there is like smoothed over, so you can't.
You can get away with sex there. I mean, I'm not aware that there's any cameras.
Court,
yeah, it's like, you know, it's all about the, you know, like, there's not, you don't have to get all when Harry met Sally.
Which, what we watched, Brian and I watched Sleepless in Seattle together.
We did. Did you cry? I did cry. You know, I always cry at that movie, but it's an affair to remember the original that actually kind of gets me. It makes me want to cry now.
Oh, dear.
Talk amongst yourselves.
That's okay. You are listening to Lefty Pinkos here on Joy. Me and Brian are trying to keep our acts together tonight.
That's right.
As we talk to Sam Warman.
Joy 94.9.
You're tuned into Joy 94.9. It's Lefty Pinkos here with Kath.
Yeah.
And
Brian.
Yay!
And Sam Warman.
Sam.
Now, you know, we're getting towards the end of the show, but we never like to leave without asking about sex. How would you define yourself sexually, Sam?
I would identify as queer, I suppose, but I don't hang that much on the labels. Like, they don't really affect my life that much. But in certain instances, it's useful to have these words, so I suppose queer is the closest thing.
Mm.
But most of us are probably uncomfortable with these boxes a little bit.
Yeah.
Brian,
go for it, Doug.
You've mentioned that you've kind of mentioned views that are like could be perceived as anti-marriage equality. Is that true, or could I assume that?
Yeah, I guess I see my politics as like from a lineage of gay liberation more than assimilation. Oh, yeah. That's a bumper sticker there, accidentally.
Let me just write that down. Where's a pen?
So I think like queerness should be transformative for us and like broader society, not that we should be like trying to have a big lavish wedding and get given a blender. And it's not something that I aspire to. I suppose if people aspire to it, I guess I don't know if I respect it, but I understand it. But I think it's kind of sad that so much of our discourse is centered around getting access to the military, being allowed to marry. I just feel like it's a sad end to what has been a really vibrant history of queer activism and transformation.
I don't know that it's an end, though, is it really? I mean, you know, it's obviously an easier thing for, you know, consumer capitalism to grab hold of this marriage thing and go, yeah, that's what the gay thing is, and to kind of begin it there and end it there. But I don't think it's where activism begins and ends, ultimately. I just want us to get over it so we can get on to the next thing, which is bound to be more
And hopefully that does happen, and hopefully we do get on to the next thing and we don't just put our feet up in the burbs. But I'm afraid that a huge chunk of queer or gay society will just
so
be
too.
Content yeah. to get married. And maybe that's their right, like, that's a whole other discourse of rights. But
I guess you've kind of been developing an anthology on Australian history, like a comic anthology.
Mm.
And, I mean, you talk about that, you know, don't just rest on your laurels in the burbs, but, you know, kind of continue that fight. Is that part of what you want with that?
Yeah, that was the intention of the book. I suppose it's probably going to be all the more timely if we do have an Abbott win and the history war starts up again. We will see like history used as a political tool. So hopefully the book, which is a collection of drawings and comics about like marginalized Australian stories. Mm-hmm. Hopefully we'll see that adding to some dialogue around, more complicated visions of history, not these really convenient, neat narrative arcs that we hear over and over again.
So you've searched through like comic archives to find them?
There's some stuff from the archives at the State Library, not far from here, but most of it's new content drawn by about 30 people from around Melbourne and the world, actually.
I'd love to see this.
So if we've got listeners who are comic artists themselves, how might they contribute to what you're doing?
They probably have to be pretty quick. It's going to print in about 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. So if they sent me drawings to sam@penerasespaper.com, they would get to me. And we're especially looking for disability-related stories and some more trans history would be good to plug those gaps in our awareness of the past.
So what kind of underrepresented mobs have you represented in this anthology?
There's like stories of workers, of sex workers, of migrants coming here, indigenous struggle, self-determination, and like history of the land itself. Just things that sort of fill the gaps between like Burke and Wills, who are actually like just entitled aristocrats strolling into the desert drunk.
Who didn't list the blackfellas because they're,
and the blackfellas tried to help them and they're like, no, we don't need you.
That's a beautiful poetic ending for me.
But then you said, it's actually quite neat, isn't it? And now they're like a barrel-chested statue on Swanston Street. And actually, if you look at photos, they're these like swollen aristocrats. Like, they did not look the way they're depicted. And they just have been made into this really neat, bite-sized story that is politically useful. So hopefully the little book will challenge some of that, but I don't expect it to have a huge reach, but if it can enter communion with a few people in their bedroom, that'll be good.
On that note, you know, we're kind of coming to an election this very weekend where Australia will go to the ballots and vote. I mean, what advice would you give to voters out there from your perspective?
I guess most people listening to Joy would probably be of a left persuasion.
I'd like to think so.
Although that pink dollar. I guess be careful of voting for minor parties, because with WikiLeaks and the Sex Party and...
preferences and
stuff. Yeah, they've given preferences to One Nation. So if you are voting for a small party, vote below the line and control your preferences, even though it'll take forever.
Like, well, that's the fun of it. Yeah. I've always done it that way. I fancy putting one number above it. There's no fun in that.
Yeah, it's true. You feel engaged with democracy.
Yeah,
But there are all these cheeky ones that are like named things that are misleading.
Yeah.
Like right-wing parties that are called like Save the Environment.
Yeah.
And that are a sort of decoy. So.
And they're actually for the like Shooters and Fishers party.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we love the environment, as in we love shooting it. So be careful. I'll probably just vote for the Greens. But also don't put all your eggs in one basket, probably. And like, I would hope people would be engaged politically all the time, not just once every 4 years. That would be a hope. And don't think that the Greens are going to solve everything, because they kind of suck on things like refugees.
Yeah.
They support mandatory detention for 30 days. And they had the opportunity.
Is there anyone who doesn't?
No, but maybe we need to think outside of the current system. Like, I feel like the Greens are capturing all radical action and thought. And
well, they're as good as we can get. I mean, that's the problem.
Is that true, though?
Well, on the ballot paper, they are.
On the ballot paper, exactly.
What? We're going to do something on the ballot paper.
Maybe there's something else.
You know, I wish I this year had the informal party, because I think the informal party is going to romp it in.
What is that?
Who are they? Well, yeah, just, please explain.
You know, I want to be the donkey vote. Because I am convinced that this year the donkey vote is totally going to romp it in.
I have a lot of friends donkey voting. And
See?
I can understand
donkey
more and more.
Here would probably be PM if I stood for the donkey vote in
That's
formal
really
party.
Clever.
I know. I wish
Change
I thought
name
of it 6
donkey
weeks
vote.
Ago. Anyway.
That'd be like a good queer scene name anyway.
Oh,
like,
dear. We're going to carry on into the night enjoying nipples and politics.
And chats.
And black and white cartoons. You've been with Lefty Pinkos. And next week, have we got a next week guest yet?
We do. It's your friend you've organised.
Lisa Sky.
No, it's...
Anyway, it's
in the notes. It's in the notes. What have we got in the notes? It's next week, we've got Kukla Fang, is it?
Yeah, Kukla Fang.
Tell us about Kukla Fang quickly.
Lisa Sky. Well, she's
there you go, same
this
person.
She's kind of chubby chick who does Lady Boner.
Yep.
And she's just Lady come back Boner. From... Edinburgh Fringe with Lady Boner, and she did it. She performed it here in Melbourne and totally went off. She's completely exhausted, jet lagged, but she will be in next week for Lefty Pinkos right here on Joy. Thanks a lot, Sam.
Thanks for having me. It was fun.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.